Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck. And guess what? Jerry's here, too. And I'll tell you what, Jerry will be the one who murdered us if we ever turn up dead in a lounge, or ballroom, conservatory, and she'll probably have used a lead pipe because Jerry carries a lead pipe with her at all times.
And her nickname is Miss Scarlet.
Yeah, she makes us call her Miss Scarlet.
I have to say, this feels like a Chuck pick through and through, but it was your pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask right away if you are a clueist. I'm historically.
Historically, yes. It's one of my favorite games of all time.
Oh, great. Me too.
I played
too.
A lot.
All right. Well, we're going to have fun talking about this then.
Man, I love Clue. As a matter of fact, I went on eBay and made a lowball offer on a complete 1972 edition of Clue, which is the one
baby.
I grew up with.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I guess I had the 86, and I looked. I was like, nope, that's not it. Went a little further back, 1972. I just started drooling from nostalgia.
Yeah, it's the 72. If you're in our age bracket, the 72 version is a very, very nostalgic sort of, like, it's just very evocative. It brings out smells in your brain and, like, fights your parents are having in the other room and, like, cartoons that are on. It's like, it hits hard. I was very disappointed because I went to find out. I was like, man, who are those models now who took that picture? I was really curious.
Yeah.
And I found a thing on Medium that
I didn't.
It's a spoof, right?
Yes.
It has to be. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, Annie Leibovitz took that picture?
Yeah. Once you start reading it, though, I was like, wait a minute. I was so disappointed because I even went to Reddit and I don't know. I couldn't find out any information on who those people were or how that went down.
I mean, it's just such an arcane thing to spoof. It was called an oral history of the photo shoot for the 1972 cover of Clue.
How excited like were that. You when you read that title?
Yeah, I was like, this is good treasure right here. Yeah. And then I thought, wow, Annie Leibovitz like took that picture. No. So whoever wrote that, if you're out there, you got us both.
Yeah. And shame on you.
So, we're talking about Clue, the game. If you're in the UK and you're like, what is this Clue they're talking about? Allow us to also call it Cluedo. Clue is way better a name for it, but Cluedo is what it's called basically outside of North America.
Yeah.
And the reason that you would qualify outside of North America is because it's a big hit all over the country. It's translated into Spanish, Swiss, those two among other languages.
I think we should go back in time. It's one of the great games of all time and talk a little bit about the invention of Clue because it's a pretty good story.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy named Anthony E. Pratt, not to be confused with the other Anthony Pratt.
Why does that name sound familiar?
I don't know. You may be thinking Chris Pratt. Well, I think Anthony Pratt's a politician of some kind.
Okay, that might be it. No, I know who Chris Pratt is.
Oh, well, I don't know. Anthony E. Pratt was born in near Birmingham in 1903, England, that is.
Mm-hmm.
He was a high school dropout, professional piano player.
Yep.
And during World War I, when he was but a young teen, the story goes that he and his friends would sit around and play what he called a stupid game called Murder, where guests crept up on each other in corridors and the victim would shriek and fall on the floor. Mm-hmm. And apparently, post high school years, was a traveling piano player that would play at these sort of ritzy country hotels, mm-hmm. where guests and the hotel would put this on at, like, you know, murder mystery night. And it was a thing. It's still a thing, murder mystery night. And it's, you know, it's sort of one of my favorite kinds of books and movies, like the Knives Out kind of thing. And he and his friends were doing this as teenagers.
Yeah. And apparently he didn't like that. Like you said, he didn't like the game Murder, but he did like the ones they put on at hotels. He didn't like Agatha Christie, which is kind of surprising because if his game can be compared to anybody's books, it's Agatha Christie's for sure. Sure. And so that was the interwar period. During World War II, 1943 found him working as a law clerk. He also worked in a munitions factory as well. And because there were blackouts at night, because the UK was getting bombed on the regular, you couldn't go out. There was nothing to do. People didn't come over. You didn't do anything. You just hung out with your family. And luckily, he and his wife had a gaming streak, I guess, in common. Because if you think about it, it's very rare to sit down and come up with a board game, even in that situation. Like, it just takes a certain person. And you put Elva and Anthony Pratt together in blackout conditions in 1943, and they're going to come up with Clue.
Yeah. Originally, they called it Murder still, this time with an exclamation point, almost an apostrophe. it was called Murder. And he thought, and they thought, rather, I think she designed some of the artwork and stuff in the original rooms and things like that, and worked on the gameplay together. But he knew that, like, you can sell board games, because he actually had a friend named Jeffrey Bull who sold a game to Waddington's Games of London. So mm-hmm. he was like, you know, we can actually sell this thing. Like, we're not just creating a fun game for our family. And that first initial game had 10 characters.
Yeah.
One was randomly chosen as the victim, which is a little different than the Clue that we know and love.
Yeah.
And there were 9 weapons. The ones that were different that I think are still kind of fun are a bomb. That would just be a fun little game piece, I think.
Sure.
Like a classic cartoon, like round fused bomb.
Mm-hmm.
A hypodermic syringe, kind of dark. A poison bottle, which is pretty obvious for a murder mystery. And then an Irish shillelagh, which is would be really kind of cool to have today. If you don't know what that is, it sort of looks like a cane. And later you could function it as a cane. But what it really was early Irish stick fighting. It's a cudgel. And it, you know, it's like a cane with a larger ball on the end where your hand would be.
Yeah, the business end.
Yeah. So just like if you look at the Boston Celtics logo, that cane that little Celtic has is, in fact, a shillelagh.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Nice description of that, Chuck. Way to go.
Yeah, I didn't know stick fighting was a thing. I kind of went down a rabbit hole. And apparently it was a stick to fight with at first, but then later on it was just like, oh no, this is just my cane. Whack, whack.
Oh, gotcha.
That kind of thing.
So something I thought was pretty sweet was that the Pratts managed to get in a meeting with the people at Waddington's thanks to their friend the Bulls, Jeffrey Bull and his wife. And the Bulls went with them to that meeting, and they all sat down and played this game, Murder, together. And
I love it.
Basically, on the spot, Waddington's is like, we'll take it. In 1945, they came up with an agreement to produce the game. Anthony Pratt got a patent for it in 1947. But again, because the UK was getting bombed on the regular during World War II, and there was a war going on, it was kind of difficult to come by some of the materials needed. So it kind of got its start in fits and starts, really kind of beginning around 1949.
Yeah. They named it Cluedo, like you said, spelled like Clue with D-O at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That is Latin for I play. And there's also a game called Ludo in Britain that's like a Parcheesi game. So I guess they thought it had some just name appeal or whatever.
I guess.
Would be my guess, because Cluedo doesn't make any sense.
Not in North America, no.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, but was it even a word there?
No, it was a made-up word.
Yeah, so it didn't make sense then either.
So that was Waddington's take on it. And Parker Brothers is like, that's lame, Waddington's. You're our partner in the UK, but we're going to name it Clue. and they produce a slightly different version. I think, for example, in Cluedo, in the original Cluedo, Mr. Green here in the United States was called Reverend Green there. Just little little differences like that that you would pick up on depending on whether you lived in the United States or Great Britain. And then I think the actual house that it's modeled on also distinguished the two games. In the UK version, supposedly it was inspired by a mansion in Sussex called Tudor Close. And it's still around. You can see pictures of Tudor Close. But one of the things that supports that idea is that in 1937, it was renovated to include a billiards room and a ballroom. And then for the American version, it was supposedly inspired by the house of George Parker, founder of Parker Brothers Games, who had a an estate that he bought in New Hampshire in 1925, and it bore some resemblance to it as well. And that house is still around, too.
Yeah, but I think you and I agree that there is only one Clue House, and that is the one on the cover of the 1972 American Board Game Edition.
It's absolutely true.
That's the house. I'm not sure where it is, because Medium tricked me.
I know.
Still salty about that. So in 1953, Pratt sold his overseas sales rights for £5,000, which would be a little over £116,000 today. Good chunk of change, although he would complain, and I think has a very good point, that like, hey, they didn't tell me they were already selling it over there.
That's a great point.
And that it was super popular. So it probably, and it seems like a sort of a lifelong thing with he and his wife, Elva, that they never got the money they should have gotten. But it was enough money at the time in one chunk to be able to quit his job and play piano full time. And he was getting those mailbox checks from the domestic UK sales.
Yeah, it was worth about £116,000 in today's money, or $147,000. Not enough to retire on, but he apparently retired on it. And like you said, he was getting those mailbox checks too, but they were set to expire in 1961. And supposedly the Independent turned up evidence that it might have been extended up to 4 years. So at the latest, he stopped getting checks in 1965 and he lived until 1994. So yeah, he had to make do all over again. It was a fortune, a mild fortune that he made, and then, you know, just kind of lived on and had to go back to work eventually.
Yeah, like, he should have been getting checks till the day he died.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, like, in Waddington's not informing him that Clue was gangbusters over there. It's like, yes, if you're a business mind, you could be like, yeah, that's business. It's called doing your due diligence. If you're Anthony Pratt and it's 1953, how are you going to find out what the sales are from Parker Brothers of Clue in North America if you don't even have a clue that the American version of Clue is selling like gangbusters over there? You probably, I don't know how you would even find that out.
No, he was taken advantage of, I think.
So, yeah, I think that's my point.
His daughter still lives today, Marcia Davies. Has been on record saying and interviewed like that, you know, it's not like we talked about Cluedo much in our house. My mom would grouse about it occasionally, that they didn't get the money they should have gotten from it.
That's a great word.
What word?
Grouse.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah.
Double meaning, too.
What, that it's a bird and attitude?
Yeah. Absolutely. Here is what it says on... and there's a little story I'll let you tell afterward. But like you said, he died in 1994. And on his grave, it says, a very dear father, Anthony E. Pratt, born 10 August 1903, died 9 April 1994, inventor of Cluedo, sadly missed. I really wish that she had put, you know, killed by Miss Scarlet in the conservatory with a lead pipe.
That would have been awesome.
Just for fun.
For sure. Apparently, he died in such obscurity that... Waddington's had no idea that he was dead for 3 years. And there's no telling if they ever really would have found out had they not been searching for him to celebrate Cluedo's 150 millionth sale.
Yeah.
And they put out a press release telling the public, like, hey, we're looking for this guy. The title of the press release was Wanted, for murder most enjoyable. And apparently the person who... ran the cemetery that he's buried in, knew that he was buried there, and got in touch with Waddington and said, don't waste your time, man.
That whole thing just really upsets me.
It is kind of upsetting. There's nothing really good about the Anthony Pratt story.
Yeah, because, like, first of all, they, I think, misled him. And then, you know, hey, he's an old man. Let's rub in the fact that we've sold 150 million of these games.
Sure.
That he didn't have a piece of. So, like, let's find him.
Yeah.
And they're like, he's been dead for 3 years.
Even worse than that, Chuck, I read that they petitioned to exhume him to bring him to the celebration anyway.
No, I'm not following.
I read that on Medium.
I mean, he should be crowned in, like, they should have a statue of him at Waddington's.
For sure. Because, you know? The reason why, not just because we're Clue fans, but because according to Fun.com, among other sources, it's probably the fifth most popular board game of all time. And that includes not just like Monopoly and Scrabble. We're talking about chess and checkers. It's in the top five with chess and checkers that have been around for thousands of years. So it was like a huge blockbuster game.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the third. I don't even... That should just be for branded games.
I agree with you. I totally agree. I think that's sucker stuff, calling chess and checkers a board game.
So I say it's the third most popular game of all time. We did a Monopoly episode. What's the other one? Scrabble?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should probably do a Scrabble ep at some point.
Okay.
Maybe we can get Hodgman to make a rare guest appearance.
Yeah, rare.
But everyone on Reddit gets mad every time I say the name Hodgman. So.
That's awesome. That must have been a very enlightening experience, huh?
Short-lived, my friend.
So, Chuck, I say that we take a little break, and when we come back, we talk about how to actually play Clue as cobbled together from people who know what they're talking about.
Let's do it.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So my one regret is that I didn't get it together enough because we were on tour to play Clue before this game, before this recording, because I haven't played it in a long time. Emily and I used to play Mano y Mano Clue.
Oh, wow.
And
can you?
We quit. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not as fun.
Okay.
And it's certainly not fun to play with Emily because she feels like she has a sort of patented foolproof victory route.
Oh, yeah.
She has a methodology that she will not tell me what it is. And she beat me every time, so we just quit playing.
That was like Yumi and me with backgammon.
Who won?
Yumi.
And she has a thing? Like she's good at it?
Yeah, she was like, it's the strategy of backgammon.
Strategy.
Not like it's a secret or anything. She's like, I just figured it out. And I still have never figured it out. So we just stopped playing.
Well, maybe we'll all get together. They can just play each other in games and we'll just sit around and have a cocktail.
That sounds like a great idea, man.
Because I'm not competitive like that.
I'm not either. It's been so long since I played a board game. I don't remember fully. And it seems like I could be competitive, but I think I was competitive at Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. I mean, I love board games. I just never play them much anymore because we don't have a lot of friends who are like, hey, let's have board game night. But I'd totally be into it.
Yeah, totally. For sure.
All right. So let's talk Clue, eh?
Oh, yeah. So in the classic Clue game, there's so many variations on it that are slightly different. Some have like extra like cards to them, or the names of the characters are a little different. But if you just look at the basic classic Clue, which that's what we're going to talk about.
1972.
72, 86, 2023, even they re-updated the classic version. But you're supposed to play with 3 to 6 players. And clearly you can play with 2. I've seen in places you can play with 2. But if you look at the instructions, it says 3 to 6 players, ages 8 and up. And if you're 7.5 and precocious, maybe you get a pass. But really, you don't want to play with anybody under 8, typically.
Yeah, I'm curious if Ruby would be into this. We'll have to give it a shot.
Okay, fair enough.
So 8 and up, what you do is you choose to be the identity of one of 6 people.
Who?
Colonel Mustard.
Yeah.
The Colonel, the good Colonel.
Sure.
Miss Peacock,
yep.
Professor Plum, Mrs. White, Mr. Green, and of course, Miss Scarlet, who... As a young Baptist boy, that 72 Clue, I looked at her picture quite a bit.
She was very attractive, for sure. So who were you? Who did you pick normally? Was there like one character for you when you were a kid?
You know, I don't remember having a favorite, now that I think about it. Did you?
Professor Plum.
Oh, okay. That fits.
I just like the name. And the color is pretty, too. But for some reason, it was like cellar door for me, kind of.
Yeah. And you're a literary sort of... type? Were you back then?
No, I like to read, but I would not call myself literary. I didn't become pretentious until much later in life.
You're like, they didn't have Joe the Plumber, so.
Right. So there's 6 murder weapons, right? 6 suspects, yep. 6 murder weapons. In the classic game, the knife, the revolver, the wrench, mm-hmm. ouch, the rope, the candlestick, and the lead pipe. A lot of head trauma among these, you know?
Yeah, 4 of them are whackers, huh?
Exactly. No shillelagh, but still, it gets the point across.
And well, I guess 3 of them are technically whackers.
What, the candlestick, the wrench, and the lead pipe?
Yeah, because the rope is a choker, revolver is a shooter, and the knife is a stabber.
Right.
So I overshot it by 1. Although you could hit somebody with a rope or the butt of a gun.
Right, or if you have a candle in the candlestick, you could light them on fire.
Ah, good point.
Or
you could do some creative things with that lead pipe, too.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
You could use it as a blowgun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although it's bent in the game, so it probably wouldn't work very well.
Yeah.
Although you could use it to shoot around a corner. So there's also 9 rooms on the board, right? And there's the hall, the lounge, the dining room, the kitchen, the ballroom, the conservatory, the library, and the study. And this was where I learned about manor houses and general estates, architectural layouts, usually on the first floor.
Yeah, I didn't know what a conservatory was. Like, it introduced me to some of these terms even.
Yeah, and the other thing, everybody, if you didn't play the 72 edition, go look it up. There's some for sale. But if you look at the board, it's really beautiful. Like, they used textures and colors to signify what room was what. I think for the ballroom, it was like parquet flooring.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this...
It's like wallpaper in one, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember which one that was. The kitchen had like a doily pattern.
Yeah.
And I think the study had like a red burgundy leather background. It was just really neat looking.
Yeah, totally. And it was, as a kid, your imagination is just running wild with this stuff. Because it is a game, and that's kind of one of the fun things about it,
yep.
Especially as a kid, is a game that has backstory, and it a lot goes on in your imagination. It's not Sorry or Chutes and Ladders, you know?
Exactly. Well put. And in addition to the fact that it had that potential to create that, it was masterfully put together. Like the details of it were really evocative of that kind of thing. So like it really helped it along, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, totally. All right. So the beginning of the game, there are three cards that reveal the murder weapon, the murderer, and where it took place. You seal those in an envelope. And the whole goal of the game is to figure out who did the murder with what weapon and in what room.
Yes. And apparently there's about 324 different solutions that it could be, which really doesn't matter because as long as there's more than one or two or three, it's going to be a different game every time.
Yeah.
So you roll the dice to move along the hallways in between rooms. And then your goal initially is to get into a room because only when you're in a room can you say that you think the murder happened in that room. You can't do it from the hallway or whatever, right?
Right.
And when you're there, when you can make a suggestion. It's kind of like a soft accusation, right?
Right.
Where you can say, I think that it's Colonel Mustard in the ballroom, which I'm currently in, with the rope. And what happens next is you go from player to player, beginning at the player on your left. And if they have Colonel Mustard or the ballroom or the rope card, because there's a card for each character, each weapon in each room, and everybody's distributed cards that they keep to themselves. If they have one of those cards, they have to show you. And if they have two of those cards, they still only have to show you one. But then your turn is over. Your theory has just been disproven. Now, you didn't win, but at the same time, you just gained a tremendous amount of information. And the other people playing, if they're paying attention, gained a lesser amount, but still some information. That's the game, like that you're paying attention like that. It's deduction.
Yeah, it's using process of elimination and deduction and taking notes, and we'll get into that in a second. One key thing here that I don't think you said was you bring all that stuff into the room. Like you bring that rope and that character into the room. So you can also use a little bit of strategy there to pull Colonel Mustard, you know, that player away from where they were into that room.
Yeah, that's a great point for sure. Some of it's luck, right?
Sure.
I mean, you roll the dice and you may or may not get into the room. And if you're not in the room, even if you know who it is, you know, let's say you're over in the study and you got to get all the way to the kitchen because you know it's the kitchen, but you can't make that final accusation and win the game until you're in the kitchen. So dice rolls have something to do with it. But really more than anything, like we said, it's mostly up to deduction and paying attention to the information you can glean.
Right. And I think I may have missed it if you said it. Did you also say that if no one reveals any card at all, then you can actually like lay it all on the line and make an official accusation?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. Well, that's one of the keys. Like if no one reveals a card, then you know, like, well, wait a minute. They don't have those cards. So it's possible that those are the three cards in that envelope.
Right.
If it's early in the game, it's obviously a huge risk. You probably want to save that till later once you've narrowed it down more. But you can, I was about to say throw your cards on the table, but don't do that. But you can say, you know what, I'm gonna do it. I'm going to go for it. And you look in that envelope. And if that's it, that's it. You're won. You've won it. And if not, then you're out. That's the big risk.
Yeah, because now you know who did it with what weapon and in what room. So you're out of the game.
You go pop the popcorn.
Exactly. Now, if you make that suggestion, that's your theory of who did it with what and where, and nobody shows you the card, if you don't have any of those cards, then you pretty much know that you're right, because I think all the cards are distributed equally among everybody, right?
Yeah.
But you would say, well, why would you even say that if you why would you mention one of the ones that you have in your hand? And this is where we start to get into like real deal strategy that you're not going to find in the rule books very much, but work really well for Clue.
Yeah, and we're going to go over there in one sec, but I did want to add, like, one of the genius things of Clue to me is that even when you're eliminated, it's still fun to sit around.
Yes.
It's not It's not one of those games where you're like, well, I'm out of here then because, you know, I'm out of the game
right.
and watching it is no fun. It's still fun to sit around and drink a cocktail and heckle everyone else.
Especially if you're eight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was. It's funny you say that because when we were researching this or when I was researching it today, I had that same memory. I was like, I remember I wouldn't get up from the table like after I was eliminated. I'd just stay there and watch. It was really entertaining. It was like the pre-internet version of Steam.
I don't know what that is.
It's where you, it's like an internet thing where you watch people playing video games. Like you're just watching them play video games.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's people. People make a living doing that.
Is that the thing where people play? Oh, did you say video games?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have heard of that. I thought you were saying board games.
No. I'll bet that's out there too. For sure. I'll bet that's out there too, and I'll bet they make a living from it as well.
All right. So we promised some strategies, and these were where did we call these from?
They came from the Spruce Crafts, Stack Exchange posts. And Reddit threads.
That's a good place to go, probably.
For sure. Because, I mean, people share strategy for Clue all over the internet. And if it works, it works.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal. I haven't played it so long. A lot of these just I didn't fully understand because I'm just so out of practice. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to buy that 72 game and get back into it and revisit these. But I can tell you about them. One of the strategies, and it, you know, it's kind of the most obvious one, is you're using those suggestions to get into that process of elimination and eliminate, you know, people, rooms, and weapons.
Mm-hmm.
It's hardest for the rooms because you have to be in that room to guess it. So you actually have to roll the dice to get there. But, you know, if you're trying to eliminate a weapon, like you want that gun out of the game, then suggest it and see if they have it. And then, you know, you can keep sort of harping on that.
Right.
But that may mean that you're also trying to throw people off the scent and they might catch on. You might actually have that card, right?
Yeah. Or, yeah, if you're watching, if you're playing with somebody and they keep mentioning the revolver or whatever every time they make a suggestion, that means either they have the revolver and they're using a process of elimination or they've already figured out the revolver is the actual murder weapon. So
right.
you if you're being really strategic, you don't want to use that same one. If you know that that's something...
Is
in that envelope, that sealed envelope is the weapon or the murderer or the room. Maybe mix it up a little bit to throw off the people who are really paying attention to you.
Yeah, for sure. So if you make or if anyone makes a suggestion and, you know, like if you suggest something to Yumi and Emily and I notice that she doesn't or that nobody shows a card.
Yeah.
Or if you suggest something, period, and no one shows you a card, then chances are that you've gotten one of the three cards in that envelope in your suggestion.
Right. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily have the answer if you don't have any of those three cards in your hand. Because if you have more than one card, let's say you say Professor Plum with the lead pipe in the conservatory. And I have Professor Plum and the conservatory in my hand. I only have to show you Professor Plum or the conservatory. I don't have to show you both. And so a good strategy is if I've shown you Professor Plum, I can write down, showed Professor Plum already. And so if somebody guesses Professor Plum and the conservatory again, I can just show you Professor Plum and I will not be giving the information to anybody that I have the conservatory as well.
You know what this episode is?
What?
Clue people are going to love it and be angry at us.
Right.
Non-clue people are just going to hate us.
Why? Because they're having trouble following what we're saying?
Well, of course. If you've never played Clue, this is getting in the weeds, you know?
Sure. It is for sure.
But we're getting in the weeds such that I also don't feel confident we're getting it all right. So Clue,
that's right.
Clueists will be like, oh, guys. How could you forget?
That feeling's like an old friend to us by now, Chuck.
Really, it's the fourth leg of our podcast.
Exactly.
One thing that they say you can do is, you know, if you play against the same people, you know, it's not unlike poker in that people bluff and they have their own little tricks and things and tells. So just to sort of pay attention and try and read them if you play with your family all the time, let's say.
For sure. So this is what it all boils down to right here, Chuck. It's deduction. It's process of elimination. I'll bet you can. So let's say you're holding Miss Scarlet, and your friend you already know has the candlestick because you guessed it before and they showed it to you. So you know that they have the candlestick. And then somebody else says that they think it was Miss Scarlet in the dining room with the candlestick. And another player is like, here's a card that disproves it. You know that that player has the dining room, right? You have Miss Scarlet. Your other friend has the candlestick. That fourth player has the dining room because they showed it to player three. And you mark that down. And if you do that enough times, you can figure out what cards are being held by people. And hence, through process of elimination, what cards are likeliest hidden in that envelope as the murderer and the murder weapon and the room the murder took place in.
I'm sure that's what Emily's doing, like a variation on that, because she's scribbling down stuff.
Right.
I'm not taking nearly enough notes, clearly, because that's a big part of the game.
Yeah.
And when I was reading about all the different note-taking, and you're going to need an even bigger notebook than the notepad they give you, I was like, oh, really?
No, it's true. There's it's a logic problem, basically, so much so that they train artificial intelligence on it. There's a Dutch computer scientist named Hans von Dittmarsch, who did a Cluedo formalization. He took Cluedo and translated it into AI instructions. And basically, what his premise is that it's all changes in information. When you interact with other players, your information changes, and so the AI tries to figure out what route it has to take through player to player to player to get to the information it needs to win the game in the fewest moves, which essentially is probably what Emily's doing. So you're married to an artificial intelligence, it turns out.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. That tracks.
But I mean, that's how logical Clue actually is. It's this process of deduction where if you can track the information that you're getting or that other people are getting, you can win the game every time, basically.
Yeah, and was that the thing that Duke University used?
Yeah, they came up with their own thing, an algorithm to play Clue, anytime you have a logic problem, you can develop an algorithm for it, right?
Yeah, so they basically turned it into an algorithm for what you were kind of talking about, like a treasure hunt problem, how to get there the quickest, how to get to the answer the quickest. And they said, like, you know, one day they can apply this kind of thing to stuff like robotic minesweeping even.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Go find the mine, like, quicker.
Yeah. If you're just playing casually with friends casually, or if you're the only one who's not playing casually, maybe reconsider using some of these harder core in-the-weeds strategies and just pay attention and use the notepad that it comes with and have fun.
Yeah, and maybe don't announce before the game that I have a foolproof method that I win every time.
Yeah. And at least don't take a lap around the game table after you win.
Oh, she's the worst winner.
All right, so let's take a break then, and we'll come right back, everybody.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So like we said, there's a bunch of variations that are just super darling. If you played Clue and it has a place in your heart,
yeah.
Depending on where you are in the world, there's just different names for different characters, right? We said that Mr. Green is called Reverend Green in the UK, or used to be. But mm-hmm. the victim, remember this, the owner of the house that everybody's at, these are party guests ostensibly, and the murder takes place. And it's the host who's murdered every time. And the host in the U.S. is known as Mr. Body, with two D's.
Yeah.
It's kind of some gallows humor. In the U.K., he's known as Dr. Black, right?
I like that, too.
What about in Switzerland?
It's funny, because some of these I was like, no, of course not. It's the classic, this is what you want. But some of these I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Herr Cluedo in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Señor Lemon in Spain.
Nice.
Like you said, he was Reverend Green, but Dr. Olive in France was Mr. Green, which is okay. Professor Plum is Professor Black in Brazil.
Okay.
Mrs. Peacock is Baroness von Blau, which I love, in Norway. And in Switzerland, I do not like this one. Colonel Mustard is Madame Curry.
Not Curie?
Is that what it's supposed to be?
I guess so.
I thought Curie was C-U-R-I-E.
Right, it is, but curry is a color.
Is that a play on that?
I think so. That's how I'm taking it.
I hate it even more.
All right. There's also been some changes to the materials, too. If you bought the original version of Clue back in 1949, I guess, the rope was actually a little tiny piece of rope.
I love that.
And the lead pipe was made of lead.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's authentic stuff. Over the years, though, they've generally stuck to the same premise, the same characters, and just kind of like it's been like jazz. Like they've been riffing on, you know, the original form.
Yeah, like the backstories would change a little bit. And this is the kind of thing where I'm really going to try and resist the urge to poo-poo more modernized changes.
I know what you mean.
As like, you know, Gen X guy who says the 72 version is the best. But
right.
Colonel Mustard is a soccer star. As of 2008, Jack Mustard, Professor Plum was turned into Victor Plum, a video game designer.
Brilliant video game designer.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, if that helps, you know, kids get into it a little more. What I am going to take issue with is adding home theater as one of the rooms.
That's funny because that was the one that made the most sense to me.
Well, I don't know.
Updating the room?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I don't know. Killed somebody with a candlestick in the home theater? I don't know. it feels at odds with the sort of, because I still sort of associate it with this sort of English estate kind of thing.
I see what you mean, for sure. I get that. But I guess they probably have home theaters in the UK, right?
No, of course they do.
Oh, okay. So that was the Discover the Secrets 2008 edition. And that was probably, from what I can tell, the biggest makeover of any of the editions. They went so far as to get rid of Mrs. White and replaced her with her adopted daughter, Dr. Orchid. That didn't last all that long. I guess it lasted a decade or two. But in 2023, they came up with another update, and they basically took it back to the beginning. Mrs. White came back, but now she's Chef White. They combined the UK and the American names for the host. And now it's Mr. Baden Body Black.
Right.
Colonel Mustard stopped playing soccer and went back to the military. Mrs. Peacock is now a lawyer, a solicitor. Mr. Green's a mayor. Miss Scarlet's the same. And Professor Plum is the same. And the weapons of the rooms are back to what they were back when we loved the game, Chuck. So you can settle down.
Yeah, and I looked up this new one because there are people that have been saying like, oh, they made them all sexy looking. I don't know about that. I guess they're a little, they skew younger than the original cast on that, or not the original, but the 72 version.
Yeah.
I believe Miss Scarlet and Plum now are people of color. Mm-hmm. So they've you know, gotten a little more diverse, which is good.
I think Mayor Green is as well.
And there are also licensed versions, which I've never seen. You know, I have that Star Wars Monopoly, which is a lot of fun, but apparently there's a Alfred Hitchcock Clue.
That sounds awesome.
It sounds pretty good, where the characters are characters from the movies, Hitchcock movies. Kind of fun.
One of the rooms is the Bates Motel.
Of course it is.
You know, I finally saw Psycho for the first time.
What?
Just like a month ago, maybe. I was reading about it, and I guess I watched that documentary about the shower scene, which is a pretty good documentary. And it made me realize, like, the way that people were talking about the movie, I'm like, that doesn't track with what I know about Psycho. And turns out it's a far different movie than what I realized. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, that whole first part of the movie, like, if you haven't seen it, you probably wouldn't even know it existed because not many people talk about it.
Yeah, and I can imagine, like, watching that movie before, you know, everyone knew that Norman Bates was the killer.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the protagonist, who you think is the protagonist, gets killed off, the big star, that it was just totally shocking.
Yeah.
Must have been amazing.
Great. Have you seen a lot of Hitchcock stuff? Or?
Yeah, which is why it's really weird that I hadn't seen Psycho.
Yeah, great movie. Scooby-Doo version, The Weapons Are Monsters. And then this one's kind of cute, The Golden Girls. Clue version, instead of murder, it's who ate the last slice of cheesecake.
That's adorable.
It's so, what do they call it online? Wholesome.
Wholesome, right. So there's been a ton of spinoffs of the Clue IP, owned by Hasbro, by the way, who also made the Stuff You Should Know version of Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah, they bought out the other companies, right? Parker Brothers and Waddington's.
Yes,
yeah.
They dominate. But so there was like a game show in the UK from 1990 to 93, which was pretty cute. I was watching part of an episode. There was a book, a series of young adult mystery books. There was a 1980s VCR game, which is actually really beloved and harder than the board game by far.
I remember those.
Yeah, me too.
Not Clue, but just VCR games.
Supposedly, Dwayne Perkins from The Blackening is coming up with an animated series based on Clue.
Cool.
And we just could not have this episode and not discuss the classic 1985 movie Clue. It's so good. Not just as in its own right, a good movie, but as an adaptation of something that already existed, it just did it perfectly.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite comedies of the 80s for sure. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, now it's making something like a movie out of a video game is something that wouldn't surprise you. But 1985, it was very unusual. It was written and directed, co-written by Jonathan Lynn and directed by Jonathan Lynn, co-written with John Landis.
Yeah.
Jonathan Lynn also directed My Cousin Vinny and The Whole Nine Yards.
Oh, cute.
So, you know, a few other pretty big movies. And it's just, it's one of my favorites. The big mistake then why it was considered a box office flop was that studio executives got greedy and they would send three different prints of Clue to movie theaters with a different ending on each print with the idea that, hey, people will go and see this movie three times to go and see the three possible endings. And it did not work out that way.
I know, that's crazy because I saw it in the theaters and I was enthralled by the idea that there were other endings. I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my short 9 years on the planet.
Did you go see other versions in the theater? Do you remember?
No, I was just content with knowing there were other versions out there. But when the movie came out on VHS, we rented it like Toot Sweet to watch them all because they very wisely included them all in the ending, which is the same if you watch it on like Prime or Netflix or whatever now.
Yeah. And it not only is it great to not have to pay three times to go see it, but it functions really well with the 1, 2, 3 endings because, you know, they do the ending and they'll say, or it could have happened like this. And then they, I mean, that's when Tim Curry just really shines.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great through the whole thing as Wadsworth, the butler, but he really, really shines when he's, it's just a genius comedic performance.
Yeah, for sure. So did Madeline Kahn as Mrs. White when she talks about hating Yvette.
Oh, God.
That was apparently improvised.
Classic.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Clue, go see it like tonight. It's just such a great movie. And our friends over at Mental Floss, Matthew Jackson, wrote something about like little known facts about the movie Clue. And apparently there was a fourth ending originally that they didn't bother shooting. Carrie Fisher was supposed to be Miss Scarlet.
Oh, gosh.
Rather than
Leslie Ann Warren.
Exactly. And get this, the singing telegram girl. That was Jane Weedland from the Go-Go's.
Yeah. I mean, there's another one, too, if you want to hear it.
Let's hear it.
You know who played Mr. Body?
No.
It was Lee Ving, who was the singer and guitarist of the hardcore punk band Fear.
No.
Yes, John Belushi's buddy.
Wow.
So two music connections. I think we should go through the rest of the cast, too, just because it's short and amazing.
It is a great cast.
Christopher Lloyd played Professor Plum. Yep. You already mentioned the great Madeline Kahn. Flames on the side of my face. It's just unbelievable. Also in that scene when he's running, he grabs her. Tim Curry grabs her to run upstairs and explain how she did it in one of the endings. And I think she probably made this up too. She trips and falls on her face like a third of the way up the stairs and he keeps going.
Yeah.
Great physical comedy. For sure. The great Martin Mull is Colonel Mustard.
Yep.
Michael McKean is Mr. Green. I mean, I feel like ruining his great last line, but maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, don't.
Okay. Eileen Brennan, who is wonderful. Miss Peacock. We already mentioned Jane Weedland and Ving. Colleen Camp, classic, as Yvette. And if you recognized the cook, it was she was a MASH. Kelly Nakahara played the cook, and she played Lieutenant Yamoto in MASH.
Yeah, I remember her.
So the cast is amazing, and if you're interested in a deeper dive, the great and wonderful Casey Wilson was a movie crush guest, and this was her movie.
Nice. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about Clue the movie, go watch it. Don't read anything else about it. Don't listen to anybody else jabber on about it. Just go watch it and thank us later. And if you've never played Clue, you'd do a lot worse than starting with the 1972 edition, friends.
Yeah.
Well, since Chuck agreed with my assessment, that means, of course, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to watch it again soon. I'm now remembering how great Eileen Brennan was.
Yeah. She's wonderful. Yeah.
Everyone is so good. All right, here we go. I, Josh, and Chuck had just finished. This is a correction of
epic proportions?
No, it's just something that we like to correct these especially. Just finished listening to the J.D. Salinger episode. Fascinating listen, so thanks for diving into this. I'm a big fan of Stuff You Should Know. This is my first time sending in a correction. But at the end of the episode, Josh refers to an article by a guy named Michiko Kakutani. I thought it was important to note that Michiko Kakutani is a woman. She's a revered literary critic, writer, and Pulitzer Prize winner. And I wanted to make this trailblazing woman make sure that she got her due on your show. And that is from Julie Ann Behar from White Salmon, Washington.
Thanks a lot, Julie Ann. I appreciate it. I feel like all the corrections that we're reading lately are mine, disproportionately.
I'm not filing mine away and like burning them.
Yeah, that was a pretty big flub. I'm sorry about that. Thank you for that correction. That was a good one. If I misspoke in this episode or any other episode that you noticed, let us know about it. Chuck will read it for sure on the air. You can send it off via email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF. 20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.